The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report. A sunny day here in Southern California. Not as sunny in Miami. Maybe it is sunny. I don't know what's going on. On the phone line right now, the host of Highly Questionable on ESPN2. The host of a drive time show in Miami that I go on every once in a while that I don't even know what the name is. I guess it's the Dan Le Batard show. But I don't know what else you're doing, but Dan Le Batard, he's on the phone right now. What's happening?
It's pretty apocalyptic here, Bill. Everybody is, terrified. This team is mocked throughout the country. It brings joy every time they lose or doubt it. So now, the Miami Heat fan is really scared. That Miami Heat team has to feel pretty lonely because the fan base has post-traumatic stress disorder from last year and is just really distrustful of this team right now.
Did you go last night?
I did.
Okay. I'm not trying to start trouble and talk about how bad certain fan bases are against other fan bases. The crowd was dead, and it actually reminded me a lot of the Cleveland crowd 2 years ago. I don't think it was a case of we're bad fans. We don't know what to do. It was more a case of we're absolutely terrified. We don't trust this team and we're crapping our pants. Is that a fair assessment of the crowd?
I think most crowds get like that. I'm guessing that if we go to San Antonio and San Antonio game five is realizing that the young Thunder aren't afraid of them, I'm guessing they could feel a similar fear. And given what happened to this team last year, maybe you wouldn't have felt it if last year hadn't happened, but given that they rolled through the playoffs last year and then all of a sudden it was over as fast as it was, game six of the final felt like what last night felt like, where you could feel the fear in the building, and then it ceases to be a home court advantage. Once you feel that, the players are on their own. It ceases to be a home court advantage. In fact, it's a little bit of a detriment because you can't get anything going. And you feel, the weight of every missed free throw.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, we thought they spent money on Haslam. They spent money on Mike Miller. They spent money on Battier. Chalmers hasn't been terrible in the playoffs. But, they still don't have that guy who – and usually it's a point guard. Just that guy is like, all right, guys, settle down. I got this, and makes a play. Like, even I was thinking about – Steve Nash, like, he's a free agent this summer. Like, you put Steve Nash in that game last night, and I feel like that whole team falls into place. It just seems like it's too easy for them to get knocked out of whatever they like to do, and then it's just these five guys standing around that, I don't sense a flow. I also don't sense a lot of chemistry. I know these guys like each other. I don't think it's a case of these guys are feuding behind the scenes or anything, but you just don't sense the chemistry that like a team like the Celtics have. Do you think that's fair?
Well, what I think is that when something happens that's a little bit inexplicable, you go searching for reasons for why it is that it happened. And when you get beaten at home with Rondo going 2-for-9 and Ray Allen going 2-for-9, Rondo 3-for-15 and Pierce going 6-for-19, it's confusing. So all of that stuff is in play because you're looking for explanations for what it is that happened. But I don't think the problems, for all the coaching criticism they're getting today and predictable they are in offense, scored 30 points in the fourth quarter. That's usually what beat the Celtics. What I've been stunned by in this series is not defensive issues. It's that a team as limited offensively as Boston against Philadelphia and Atlanta is doing bigger, better things against what is by consensus, a better defense. Miami's defense is better than Atlanta and Philadelphia. So,
right.
All that criticism is in play once you lose.
I would say the biggest factor from that end is that Ray Allen has been a different guy in this series than he was in the first two. I don't think he's back to being the old Ray Allen, but he's gone from being somebody who was a legitimate liability and somebody who couldn't move to somebody who's doing a really passable Ray Allen impression. And for, you know, for whatever reason, this Celtics team has a ton of confidence against Miami. And I don't know whether that it's partly a LeBron James thing or whether they just don't think Miami's well coached or whether they just love this particular matchup for them. But man, you know, I went on your show after game two. I thought they should have won game two and came damn close anyway. They didn't really have any luck with the officiating that game, but they've played the last four games like a team that honestly believed they were going to win, which is kind of half the battle when you're going against a juggernaut like Miami. And you know, you followed the Miami team more closely than I have. When Dallas kind of got to that same point too, what is it about the makeup of this Miami team that they seem to be different when they're up 10 versus when it's a close game in the last couple minutes and the other team is staring at them going, yeah, we're going to be right here. We're not going away. You're going to have to beat us.
Well, don't you think that Boston's that way with every team they ever play? Like, I don't think Boston, those resumes, I don't think that they're ever going to be afraid of anybody. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, usually Miami, for all the glamour and for all the fame and people love offense and love highlight plays and spectacular plays, Miami's offense is not how they identify themselves. The way Miami identifies itself is defense. And the Celtics have put up a ton of 30-point quarters in this series, which
yep.
doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I'm sitting there watching it, and I don't understand it. If you told me in the middle of that game, 42-40 at halftime, if you told me the Heat are going to put up 30 in the fourth quarter, and the Celtics are going to match them, match the defense. Because you remember the end of game four after the Celtics put up 61 in the first half? Do you remember how hard it became to score for the Celtics in the fourth quarter of the game? That's what I expect at the end of games from Miami. That's how they got to the championship last year. And, the Celtics through the last four games have cracked that.
So let's say the Celtics win game six, certainly a possibility. They're home. What happens to this Miami team? Like, I hate doing the hyperbole thing, and I'm guilty of doing the hyperbole thing from time to time. I feel like this is the biggest conference finals game in 14 years since Pacers Bulls 1998, just in terms of like the historical ramifications of it. Like that was Jordan's like last great team. He was obviously going to retire. He was leaning toward retiring at the end of that year. He's got this Indiana team that's just fighting back tooth and nail that entire series. And it got to a point where it was like, wow, this could be Jordan's last stand. He might lose the title here. I watch this Miami team and I think, wow, if they lose this game six, or even worse, if they get killed in this game six, like, it feels like the historical axis of the league is going to change a little bit. And that's before you throw in all the Boston subplots of Rondo and KG and Pierce and Ray Allen and Doc Rivers. I mean, do you feel like that sense of history that's here in this game?
Well, with this team, I have felt since it started. I mean, every time they lose, everyone's getting traded and everyone's getting fired. Like, the expectations with this team and what the noise that surrounds this team is unlike anything I've ever covered in sports. So it's hard to read through the distortion and see what they feel on the inside, given all that you have on the outside. So I have no idea what Pat Riley's reaction is going to be, whether he shrugs his shoulders and says, well, this only happened because Bosch wasn't healthy, or you know, whether he's reasonable and loyal, or whether he blows the thing up because he's impatient. I think it's really hard to see it from here. But when you talk about the history, the reason this feels here in Miami, just short-term history, this game feels, they've only been in this situation one time, and they lost at home, terrified, in game six of the final. Dirk Nowitzki called like 1-for-13 in the first half, because the weight of this is so enormous. You know, you always have the cushion. Last night you're playing, and I don't think that he was scared last night. I don't think at the end of the game they were scared, but I do wonder if it comes down to the end of the next one where that's it. It ends. I do wonder whether that would be a weight that they're carrying around. But, of course, this is big, Bill. Like, you tell me, what does America want? Because I don't think America wants the Heat losing in this round. I think what America wants is the Heat losing in the next round, losing to the Thunder, so that the idea of it, you can spend the next series rooting against the Heat, and then also you can think, oh, wait, that team's younger than the Heat. The Heat's window just closed.
It's an interesting question. It seems like people have a lot of different agendas with this series, just from people I talk to, people in my life, emails I'm getting from readers, things like that. Some people just love when Miami loses, and they're going to root for whoever's playing them, and that's it. Some people have gotten attached to the Celtics thing and, you know, the old team, the crusty old guard getting together one last time. It's a fun storyline. Other people just hate Boston and want Boston to lose. Other people feel like what you just said, like, oh, this would ruin what would be an awesome Miami-Oklahoma City finals. I've already watched these Celtics guys a bunch of time. I want to see LeBron play Durant. And, you know, and then there's other people that I'm sure that are out there like, man, wouldn't it be great if Miami just totally imploded here? You know, and this was the end of this. 2 summers ago, they do the decision and the Heat welcome party, all that stuff. And then 23 months later, it basically just completely self-combusts one last time here in the Boston Garden. I think people would sign up for that. I look at the Miami team and I still keep coming back to Wade, because Wade, time and time again, LeBron can, even though LeBron's been great in this series, he'll still, you can see him checking out a little bit or getting tentative in certain points, especially in big moments. And Wade was always the guy who's just had that fearlessness to him. Like in game two, he was the guy that stared down KG. What do you think, he's healthy? Because I feel like he's not 100% healthy.
No, I don't think he's healthy. He doesn't have the normal explosion that he has. But, I mean, is Pierce healthy?
No.
I mean, who the hell's healthy at this point? I mean, Caron Butler was running around out there with a broken hand. I mean, like, I don't think he's healthy. And, I mean, these are some of the worst halves of basketball that any of us have ever seen from him. And he played the single worst basketball game in game three against the Pacers that I have ever seen a superstar play in a big spot, where he was dribbling the ball off his foot, stepping out of bounds, and doesn't score 5 points in that spot on 2 of 13 shooting. So, no, he's not right, and his jump shot is broken.
It was interesting when he passed up that three, dribbled in, and then almost passed up the two, and then like begrudgingly took it and made it with like about 4 minutes to go.
You remember how often he killed Dallas because he was kind of Russell Westbrook with accuracy, where you simply couldn't stop the jump. He was going to go get his jump shot in the middle of the paint. He was going to get it whenever he wanted to. And he was going to hit it. He does. I mean, it's broken. He's shooting like that. A lot of people were telling me they liked the shot at the end of the game in Game Four against the Celtics, because it's an open look to finish the game. You don't go into double overtime, and you got clutch guy taking it in Dwayne Wade. But he's the 27% shooter from three this year. Like, that wasn't a good shot. I mean, I know it looked like a good shot, but he doesn't make that shot a lot.
And also, you know, hasn't been shooting even the two-point shot that well this series. The thing that I thought was fascinating about last night's game, other than the fact that the crowd just seemed to almost infect the Heat players, like it just seems everybody was just panicked. The Celtics played pretty poorly for three quarters there. And it's just like Miami kept letting him hang around. I'm sending emails and I'm sending texts to my Boston friends saying like, man, they're dying for us to take this game. They're just dying for it and we just can't make a shot. Then finally the Celtics started playing better. And what's interesting is if you watch the last 5 minutes of the game, Miami played pretty well. Like they got good shots. Boston just was lights out in the last 5 minutes. Like when was the last time you remember somebody blocking LeBron's shot at the rim like KG did with 3 minutes left? I can't remember the last time KG did that. You know, that was one of the big swings of the game. Boston got to the loose balls. They made threes. They made all their free throws. Like, they played that last five minutes about as well as a team can play, I felt like.
Well, they closed it out. Like, didn't miss a free throw. The Heat have been missing free throws throughout. I tell you, though, I do wonder about this. When we talk about pressure and we talk about the stakes and we talk about this Boston team, is already really overachieved. I mean, if they were to lose in seven to the Heat, while it'd be disappointing, I mean, there would be no shame in it for the Boston fan. I do wonder about this. The shot that Pierce took in that spot with a minute left or less than a minute left in LeBron's face, up one, not a good shot, even though he makes it. It's not a high percentage shot, especially with LeBron on you. I wonder if the situation is reversed in game six, where whether anybody on the Heat, given the consequences in the stakes, would have the balls to take that shot, because of everything that hangs over them that doesn't hang over Paul Pierce. And I know Paul Pierce has been making that shot for the entirety of his career, but can you imagine anybody on the Heat, given what's at stake, doing that with 50 seconds left?
Yeah, I would say Wade would be the only one to do it. You know, it's funny you mentioned balls. A friend of mine was sitting behind Boston's bench. He said you could see Pierce talking after he made it. He was saying, I have the balls to take that shot. That's what he was saying. And I think it's kind of like it's, you know, the athletes have to pump themselves up, but it seemed like it was more of a dig at the Miami guys. Like he was saying those guys didn't have the balls to take that shot. I don't know, but that's what he was muttering himself. And the funny thing about it was I wrote about this today on our blog. I thought it was going in. And he was 5 for 18 at that point and could hit the side of a barn. But when he took that specific shot, I was like, oh, that's going to go in. We're going to be up 4. And then
well,
it went in.
That's where you are with the Celtics, and that's where fans are with the Celtics. Because you've seen them do it,
yep.
You trust them. And because Heat fans haven't seen them do it, and quite the opposite, last year saw them not do it. Yeah, I don't think there's that kind of faith in this team. And I don't know whether that's something that, you know, a Dwayne Wade or a LeBron James, so that it would affect how they play. I don't think it would affect a Dwayne Wade, but I guess everybody would say it would affect LeBron.
So you think Spoelstra's definitely the Fredo here, right? If they lose?
Well, you know what's funny about this, Bill? Like, Spoelstra's just getting savaged all over the place, that he's getting outcoached by Doc Rivers, and that may indeed be so, but I'm sitting here looking, and last year, Eric Spoelstra beat Boston in 5, and the difference, I don't think, is that Eric Spoelstra outcoached Doc last year and isn't able to outcoach him this year. I think the difference is that last year he had Bosch, and after 2 games, Doc didn't have a healthy Rondo. And so now, Miami doesn't have Bosch, and Boston does have a healthy Rondo, and all of a sudden you go from a 5-game series last year where one of the games was decided in overtime, and could have been 2-2 if Boston doesn't lose Game 4 in overtime. You have the same series here, and people are talking about this guy's outcoaching that guy. And to me, it's just—I mean, the teams are a lot closer. They're a lot closer to being peers and equals than any of us thought.
You know how this stuff works, though. You can pass a point with a coach when once there's blood in the water, it's kind of over. And I feel like Spoelstra's at that point. Because even if he comes back next year, let's say they start out 11-7, then it all starts to get, like, you almost can't come back past a certain point. And also, maybe they do need a better coach. I know Phil Jackson and Pat Riley hate each other. I know this rumor's been around. At the same time, it does seem like this is the logical place for Phil Jackson to end his career, running the triangle with Bosch, LeBron, and Wade. And you know, now he's with 3 generations of the most polarizing and best superstars that the league's had. It seems like that's the logical conclusion. Is there any chance Phil Jackson would be involved there? I can't imagine him and Riley would bury the hatchet, but what do you think?
I don't think that's a possibility. I mean, Riley runs this organization and likes having his own people, and that guy I would think would be last on the list. I think you're more likely to see, this is how unlikely I think that is. I think you're more likely to see, to look up at your television today and see on the ESPN scroll, Brian Windhorst reporting that Pat Riley is going to coach Game 6.
Ooh, I was wondering if he would maybe do that. In a sports movie, he'd do that.
Come on, let's do that. Like, how? That's the only way this thing could get more fun, is if all of a sudden, just coming down, you know, all of a sudden before Game 6, it's announced that, Riley will take it from here.
By the way, as a Celtics fan, that scenario would terrify me. I thought you were going to say that Windhorst was going to get hired to coach the Heat, and I was thinking like, not a bad idea. Like, he knows this Heat team pretty well. So he can maybe can reach LeBron. Yeah. I think he can do some good things.
gosh, they're so down on Spo here right now. I mean, but they're,
yeah.
I just think that's what happens whenever you can't explain. Like, I think it's real hard to explain in tangible terms what it is that you witnessed last night. And the place that I would go with that is I would say that, you know, Boston was 27th in the league in free throws taken, and Miami was 2nd. Boston took more yesterday, and it's not because the referees. It's because Miami took 26 threes in the game. They were playing a docile, soft game. They tilt all the game's odds in their favors because they get so many free throws, and they just decided to play a totally different game yesterday at a really bad time.
On Grantland today, Malcolm Gladwell and I exchanged, we spent the last 2 days exchanging emails. And one of the topics, I don't want to give too much away, but one of the topics was about what it's like to be LeBron James in 2012 in the digital age, and the fact that, you know, he's a brand. He's managing that brand because that's what you have to do 24/7. You're on Twitter. You're constantly worried about how you're being perceived. The fact that you're always conscious of what people are thinking of you and you're listening, and it's not like one of those things where you're tuning it out and you're saying, I'm going to block those guys out. He can't because he's managing his brand. Could that be part of the reason why it almost seems like he gets overcome in some of these moments in these games?
Man, I don't know. I enjoy psychoanalyzing him and wondering whether or not he's got some sort of short circuit in the hardwiring that would make him unlike any great player ever. And, you know, the narrative a lot of times is that that kind of guy, the assassin guy, has to have some you in him.
Right.
And that he doesn't seem to have very much of that in him. But I just think that at the moment, he's got to feel, with criticism or no criticism, he's just got to feel so alone, Bill, because, I mean, have you seen what happens to the Miami Heat? I mean, this team has Dwayne Wade on it. When he leaves the game for a minute and a half, like, he leaves the game for a minute and a half and leads evaporate, and Mario Chalmers is throwing the ball off the shot clock, and,
right.
And they don't look like they know what they're doing, and the defense just completely short-circuits, and, I mean, he's got to have huge, huge confidence in his skills, but I don't see how right now he can look around him and feel anything other than really alone.
Well, and that goes back to the coaching thing, because Spo did him a disservice last year and he did it again this year. I just think he plays too many minutes. And when you look at the two-way responsibility he has for Miami and just how much he means to that team, nobody can play 45 minutes a game in the playoffs. The only guy who could do it was Allen Iverson, who flamed out so quickly and so fast that, you know, he was begging for a job in the second round of the playoffs to the sideline reporter. I just think it's not fair to LeBron. You know, that's where a coach just say, and this is something that Doc did with Kevin Garnett. You know, he knows what Kevin Garnett's minutes should be. He never wavers from those minutes. Like, he even had him out. I forget if it was game four or game five. You know, it was 5 minutes left in the game and he had him out because KG had played too many minutes because of foul trouble. And, you know, I think the combination of the minutes and the pressure and the fact that, you know, these guys put themselves in a corner in the summer of 2010 with some of the boasting. And that's the one thing you can't do as an athlete.
Keep faking that out, though. Like, I've thought that the way that this is going to end up is that we're going to find ourselves in a situation, game six or game seven, at the very end, where LeBron James, he's exhausted because of all the minutes, and at the very end of a game, he's going to have one of two options. He's not going to be able to take the jump shot. And Michael Jordan won all his games on jump shots. They weren't won at the rim. He's not going to be able to take the jump shot because his legs are going to be dead. And he's just, I mean, it's just not the most prudent shot. He can't get to the rim. So those aren't good options. Or he gets fouled. And now with all of that at the end of the game, he's not a good free throw shooter. Like, he's okay. Yes. He's not a consistent free throw shooter. So now add the fatigue on top of that. Like, I down the line, I've seen, maybe it ends faster than that. Down the line, though, and I've seen some sort of disaster scenario where the fatigue just grabs him right at the end, and then he has to live with another offseason of, well, mental frailty. Imagine that. Imagine taking free throws after you played 45 minutes, defended all five of the positions, and you're just okay at free throws. You're not consistent with your free throws.
Yeah, I just want to say, I think he's been incredible in these playoffs. To me, this is like, If you're going to say, like, 50 years from now, what kind of player was LeBron James like? Like, just watch some of the fact that he's guarded all five positions. There's only been one other guy in the history of the league who can do that. Magic Johnson. And by the way, Magic Johnson wasn't a good defensive player. He's the only guy who could guard Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Rajon Rondo really well in the same game. You know, and that's before you get to the fact that he's averaging 30 points, 8 assists, and 9 rebounds or whatever his numbers are. You know, I just think – I don't think he should be the scapegoat for what's happening here. If anything, I think the scapegoat should be the mentality that you can win with three guys and that it, a supporting cast doesn't matter. And this is something we argued about on your radio show for 2 solid years. Have you changed your opinion on that? I mean, you see the value of an 8-man team now, right?
Well, no, this is where I have changed my opinion, and it has been changed by a representative 2-year sample size on this Heat team that has forced me, because this team is not as good as I thought it was or I expected it to be, and this has all been a lot harder than I thought it was. I don't think it's 8 players. I think your 3 players have to fit better than this. That Boston won the championship the first year with 3 lesser talents in Ray Allen, Garnett, and Paul Pierce, and won it their first year. Had the labor to do it through the playoffs, but won 66 games that first year, the second most in that franchise's history, and came out of the box without needing to congeal because the pieces fit. Like, and I think that these guys can, the talent here is so overwhelming that you can overcome, and they did last year, overcome pieces fitting better in Boston and in Chicago. But sometimes, in a 7-game series, the talent isn't going to be able to do that to the team. And so it's not unsimilar to the concern I have with Oklahoma City. Those pieces don't fit perfectly either. You'll file that under supporting cast. Here, you've got 2 guys who do the identical thing. And that wasn't the case with Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett. So I've had to lend more credence to the idea that it can't just be talent. You can't overcome a team just with overwhelming talent. They were 2 games from doing that last year, but that's where I think I've had to change my mind.
Can I say something?
Yes.
That's what I was telling you 2 summers ago!
You were telling me that Eddie House was important.
He was!
That the 8th guy is important.
It is!
Oh, come on.
Who hit the biggest shot of yesterday's game? Michael Petras.
Yes, Michael Petras did, but who usually hits the big shot? You're talking about James Harden hitting the shot at the end, or Paul Pierce hitting the shot at the end?
The Oklahoma City won Game 4 because Ibaka and Perkins went 18-for-20, and San Antonio played really well in that game, and Ibaka and Perkins kept them in it, and then Durant just did his thing at the end. But you know, going back to the double guy who does the same thing, I thought that was the most interesting thing of this Oklahoma City series. We'll see if it continues, but there was a very similar alpha dog issue with Westbrook and Durant with the LeBron Wade, like, oh, is it my turn? Is it your turn? Durant kind of not only proved that it was his turn and that it's his team, but Westbrook, that was one of his best games in Game 4. He actually, like, accepted the fact that this was Durant's team, and he stayed out of the way, and he let Durant do his thing. With Miami, it's just, it's too weird. Like, sometimes Wade will take over, but there's LeBron James, who's one of the most 10 talented players who's ever played, just standing in the corner. It makes no sense. It's an illogically put together team, and if they can win the title despite that, I'll be surprised. I personally think they need, you know, I think Nash or somebody like him would be the answer. I just think you need a point guard who can decide, all right, you're getting the ball here. You're getting, you know, like the way Rondo directs the Celtics. Go over there. This guy's shooting here. We're going to do this time. Maybe that's what they need.
But you've got 2 guys who create all the offense off the dribble. Like, those are 2 guys. You're talking about, first of all, Westbrook has taken more shots this postseason than Durant has.
True.
And LeBron has taken a lot more shots this postseason than Wade has. I mean, Wade gave the team over to LeBron. Like, Wade says by his own words, I had to step back. This is the best player in the world. I saw that we were a lot more efficient with him. I'm trying to fit my game around what he's doing now. I mean, if we had this conversation 3 games ago, we would have been talking about how they figured that part out. If we'd been having this conversation 3 games ago, we'd been talking about how Oklahoma City hadn't figured that out.
That's why I went on your radio show after Game 2, and I was so upset when they lost. That was the most upset I've been after a loss, and it wasn't just the officiating. I really felt like this Miami team could be had, and the Celtics missed their chance in that game. Because I felt like, all right, The Celtics are as good as Miami. Like, they can win this series, but it's too hard to win 5-2. Like, once you have a game where you should have won it and you didn't, it's just mentally in the NBA, that seems like too big of a thing, which is why I was just, I just can't believe they've won 3 in a row. I just assumed one of these 3 games.
I don't think momentum carries over from game to game. I mean,
maybe it doesn't.
Because you guys, I mean, game 3, Boston, like, that was a crushing defeat for Boston, game 2. And
yep.
game 3, they were overwhelming. That's the best game, you know, that's the best game they played in the series.
Well, I didn't mean that, you know, it was going to discourage them from thinking they had a chance. It was more like a law of averages. Like, if you go into it thinking, all right, they should have won game 2, then basically you're saying, all right, now they basically have to win 4.5 out of the 7 games against a team that has the 2 best players in the series.
You still have the dirty pants.
I still have the what?
The dirty pants.
What are the dirty, what's that?
Marcin Gortat said that when he got his nose broken, they tried to readjust it and realign it, and it hurt so much that he was describing it as, I almost got the dirty pants. And the entire Heat fan base right now has the dirty pants, but it sounds like you're not totally confident in game 6, that you're remembering that Atlanta beat Boston there, that Philadelphia beat Boston there, and that Miami was a bounce, you know, was a shot for beating Boston there the other day. I thought you'd be cockier today. I thought you'd be more confident.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the team's old. It's my favorite Celtics team in 25 years. The crowd is going to show up and be incredible. I know that much. I know that the Celtics team, in the past has been able to close things out at home when they've had the chance. But it's still a game where the other team has the 2 best players on the floor. And we can say, yeah, Boston plays better, and that's usually going to prevail. But, I mean, you're telling me it's not conceivable that LeBron could go for like a 45, 15, 16?
Well, he could. But, see, when you say 2 best players on the floor, Wade in this series has not been the 2nd best player on the floor.
That's true. It's true.
Garnett has been.
And even Rondo. I mean, Wade's probably been 4th. I would say KG and Rondo have been 2-3.
But can Wade do what he did in game 6 at Indiana, where he went 17 for 25? Can he do that again? I don't know. I mean, they do have 2 guys. They are the only team in this series that has 2 guys that could go for 40 and 10.
Right. And then the other thing is, the other thing that scares me about Miami, just from a game-to-game basis, is they have enough 3-point shooters who can get hot that they can have one of those games where they go like 15 for 25 from 3. And that's why in game 1, I was so nervous. I said this to you on your show, like, you know, Miami won by 10 and their 3-point shooters went 5 for 25 from 3. You just figured law of averages. Oh, that's not happening again.
Well, that happened again last night.
It happened again last night. And, I do think for Miami to win, I don't think they're going to get the 40-point game from Wade. I just think physically he's 65%. And I don't think LeBron, it's just not in him to drop. I guess he did it against Indiana in game 4, but this isn't Indiana. You know, it's just going to be too hard for him to break 40, I feel like. He would have to be one of the 3 best games he's ever played. But the way that they can get into this is if they can start making some 3s and putting, you know, kind of open up the floor. And they need their supporting guys in this game. More than they've ever had. You know, I thought they lost to Dallas because of LeBron and to a lesser degree Wade and Bosch, but this is a series where their supporting guys just need to step up for them. And I don't know if they're good enough.
LeBron is 2 for 6 in this kind of elimination game, but you remember one of them probably. I mean, he did do it against this Boston team. He did it against this Boston team in 2008. He went 45-5-6, but they lost.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, this is goes back to the discussion about what's changed about him that Gladwell and I were having. In 07, comes through against Detroit, game 5, epic performance, one of the best ever. 2008, shows up for game 7, plays a fantastic game, and if Delonte West hits a 3, they probably win that game. Delonte missed a 3 with like 2 minutes left, and if it goes in, I think Cleveland would have been up by 3 or 4. And then 2009, he was superhuman in that entire playoffs, and especially in the Orlando series. I mean, he was a one-man team and almost beat Orlando by himself. Orlando's playing well. But we haven't seen that guy really on a consistent basis for 3 years. And, You know, I mean, man, I just think this is an incredible game. You're not going, are you? You can't. You're doing TV?
Yeah, I can't go. It's a crazy game. Like, I have no idea what to expect in that game because Miami's favored to win. Miami, you know, Dwayne Wade hits a shot in the last game at Boston. They feel like they can win there, I would assume, given that it was a shot that they came from winning after allowing 61 points in the first half. They've seen Atlanta and Philadelphia win in Boston. The thing that would prevent me from thinking that they could win this game, the only thing, is that they just collapse under the weight of it. They could win if they just play the way they normally play, but the weight for this game is going to be unlike anything that they've felt. They've only felt it one other time, and it was game six of the finals last year when they collapsed under it.
Yeah, and this Boston crowd is going to be tremendous.
Yeah, that was at home. Yeah, that was at home.
Yeah, this Boston crowd, there's certain crowds you just don't want to see in this specific type of situation. The Boston fans are going to be really loud, and if they smell blood in the water, they're going to go for it. And, I guess the best case scenario for the Celtics would be game six against the Lakers in 2008, which was just, could smell it from the get-go, went after it, took a lead, crowd took over, guys went to another level, people are making threes. Like, that's your best case scenario. I don't think this Celtics team is as good as that 08 team, but they play better together. And it's going to be fascinating. Man, this is fun, though. I mean, what were we saying after game one on your show? I was like, man, I love this series. Like, it's just, this is a great rivalry. I'm so glad that, you know, but there's been some bitterness back and forth with the Miami fans, the Boston fans, all that stuff. But ultimately, this is just fantastic. Like, this is a rivalry that I feel like KG's coming back. The Celtics are going to be there next year. They're going to bring back Jeff Green. I think they're going to have Chris Wilcox back. They're going to have Bradley's healthy. They have two draft picks. Like, they're going to be around next year, and we get to keep doing this. So that's my favorite part of this whole thing.
I asked fans the other day here if they were having fun, and the answer was no. The answer was no, because it's not fun to lose. I would say it's great fun.
I could see that part. I'm just, in general, as sports fans, this is great theater. Like, this is why we do this, I feel like. You know, this is why we do, you churn out crappy columns in February and you grind your way through some TV show where you don't even have one interesting topic in March. And this is, it's for weeks like this, you know, this is freaking theater. It's great. Anyway, thanks for coming on. Good luck on your local radio show. Say hi to Stu Gatz for me.
All right, brother. Always a pleasure. I'll talk
to you soon. Talk to you soon. All right, before we go, I wanted to bring in ESPN.com NBA Page's meal ticket. He writes like every day. I'm really jealous of his work ethic. I used to have it once upon a time. John Hollinger, what's happening?
Not much. Really, really excited to swear a little.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, drop as many. You can go full KG on us if you want. Dan Lebatard and I just talked about a lot of the big picture storylines of the Miami-Boston series and a little bit about Oklahoma City-San Antonio and tried to psychoanalyze some things, stuff like that. Give us, from a numbers perspective, is there any rhyme or reason what has happened to either of these series in the past three games?
No, both of them in a lot of ways defied what we'd expect from everything we saw in the season. In the case of Miami-Boston, Boston is scoring far more easily than we had any reason to expect, and that's really been the story of that whole series. Yeah. And then in the Oklahoma City series, Oklahoma City's role players are crushing San Antonio's, which is the complete opposite of how the whole season went up till three games ago there, too.
And you talk about Boston scoring more efficiently. You love a stat. Zach Lowe loves it. A couple other people, what is it, points per 100 possessions?
Yes, yes.
And Boston was way down. And for whatever reason.
In the regular season.
And for whatever reason, that's jumped way up. And it's illogical. I have no explanation as a fan watching it. Do you have any explanation?
I think Miami's transition defense has been poor, certainly. And Boston has an easier time scoring in transition than it does in the half court. I think that's definitely been a factor, because those opportunities weren't there for them as much against Atlanta and Philadelphia, and they had a hard time scoring in those two series too. Their defense was just so dominant that they won anyway. But against Miami, I mean, we saw especially last night, you know, all these plays where Wade is just jogging back on defense. You know, that whole thing Rondo said at halftime of game four was, it wasn't a slap at Miami as much as it was the truth. That's exactly what's been happening. You know, Miami guy stands there with his arms up in the air looking at the ref, and then it's 5-on-4 the other way. And that's a situation Rondo is so good at taking advantage of.
Yeah, it's Miami's a very entitled team, and that's why I kind of freaked out after game two and then eventually had to ban myself from Twitter during these Celtic games, because it's not just the fact that they were getting most of the calls, but that they felt like they should be getting all of them. And that was frustrating to watch, especially when your team's blowing a chance to tie the series. But I agree with you. The effort on the Miami end has not been what it was. But then part of me wonders, well, is that because LeBron has played 16 playoff games and is averaging, what, 43 minutes per game? And and Wade's banged up and he's playing 40 minutes a game? Like, are these guys just wearing down?
And you wonder if the Bosch injury is catching up to him that way, because they played so well those games against Indiana that they needed. But there was a price for that, I think, and we may be seeing that now. So, you know, maybe Bosch comes back to the rescue tonight and everything's okay, but they put themselves in a real hole.
Yeah. And you're also seeing the price of building your team around three guys, basically.
And well,
all of your money that way.
You see, I don't think it's just that, though. They made bad decisions, too. I mean, they used two full mid-level exceptions and ended up with Mike Miller and Udonis Haslam.
Yep.
And they also spent real money on Joel Anthony. And then
like
they
that.
Used the mini mid-level on Battier. And I think if you look at what San Antonio did, for instance, they didn't spend any more money than Miami did, and they ended up with a lot better players. And the Heat, I think, were very focused on getting like these sort of 34-year-old veteran grinders. And so even though they have LeBron and Wade, they kind of have this really unathletic team around them, and the pieces don't quite fit.
Yeah, they made a couple classic mistakes. The Haslam contract I was okay with because he took such a discount. I think he would have gotten more in the open market. Miller was somebody that just got hurt all the time. You know?
In retrospect, they should have signed Kyle Korver. I mean, that was the play.
Or how about this?
Less money.
You don't have to do anything. Just go into the season and try to, you know, play some games. This is what you and I similarly are driven crazy by GMs. Sometimes teams get in this mindset where they have to build their team. They have to build the team that they're going to have the following June in August. And they have to get and we see year after year that's not how the league works. Like, guys are going to become available from December to February that you don't know are going to become available. You have buyout guys year after year. Like, look at Boris Diaw this year. San Antonio couldn't have planned for that. The worst thing you can do is tie up your cap with role players, especially guys like Miller who, you know, don't play all the time. I didn't like that signing when it happened. I think people seem to be more surprised with how Battier has played than maybe, you know, some of the people that were pretty watching these games pretty closely. I thought Battier had been slipping the last couple of years. Didn't you feel that way too?
Oh, totally. And you can see it. I mean, his plus-minus numbers were, when Houston was really at their peak with, you know, Yao and T-Mac, Battier had these crazy plus-minus numbers. He just doesn't have those anymore. He's still effective within his little role, but he can't go outside that box at all.
Yeah, and he's somebody that could, I think he'd be a really valuable eighth or ninth guy. But if you're trying to roll with him as the fourth piece on your team, I don't know if he's that kind of player anymore. And, you know, looking back, I know maybe it was part of the package, but was it a great idea to spend $18 million a year on Chris Bosh? Could they have been better off maybe splitting that money up? I forget who was available last summer, but you get LeBron and Wade and then try to get a couple $9 million guys versus one bigger guy. I don't know, but it certainly seems like they're better fits. There's been some buzz about a Bosch-Gasol trade maybe this summer. You don't think they'd blow this up if they lost, do you?
Well, it's interesting because I think they would feel a little bit like they never had their big three in this series. So you could defend keeping it together more than if Bosch had played the whole time and they were in this predicament. I think it would be easier to say, well, we got to do something here. But injuries are a little something that's a little more beyond their control. Bosch Gasol is interesting to me because it gives them more of a pure post-up guy, which Bosch really isn't, and that would give them a very different look than they have right now.
I would flip Bosch for Gasol, and I would on July 1st at midnight, I would be outside of Steve Nash's house just begging him, please, we need you. You need to win a title. You're the only guy who could figure this really bizarre Wade LeBron thing out. Come on. Come win a title with us. Like that, if they lose, I feel like at the very least they have to change the coach and change some of the team. I don't think they have to do anything as drastic as Jade Bosch, but at least they have to sniff around. Let's talk about Oklahoma City, San Antonio for a second, because I haven't been as surprised by anything that's happened in the playoffs in a while. I really thought San Antonio, maybe I jinxed them with the column I wrote. I thought they were invincible. You were on it a little earlier than I was. You were writing, even heading into the playoffs, like, hey, look at you guys got to watch out for this team. Their demise these last three games, it's inexplicable or explicable?
It's hard to say anyone could have seen this coming. I mean, I thought coming into the playoffs, I thought there was no way anyone was beating San Antonio. Obviously those first 10 games, which they won, only reinforced that impression to me. But Oklahoma City, I feel like something clicked with them. Like they are moving the ball in a way they never did the entire regular season.
Agree.
And, you know, Westbrook is making passes we haven't seen him make. Durant is finding guys, and all of a sudden all these role players who are just sitting around kind of hanging out waiting for the ball to come off the rim to get it. Now they have something to do on offense, and you have to guard five guys instead of three, and it's become really tough. And then they're forcing so many San Antonio turnovers, which they never did in the regular season, and San Antonio never turned the ball over. Which is really bizarre.
And they're playing the right guys the right minutes now. Like in game two, they played Derek Fisher 26 minutes, which just should never happen ever.
Yeah.
It just shouldn't. I thought Brooks just didn't do a great job. I know they're playing better, but it's pretty clear who their best guys are. And I'm surprised. The thing that's amazed me is that they've had so much success in 4 and 5 with Ibaka and Perkins playing together, because to me, I thought that was the Spurs' best chance to win if those two guys played together. And after the first two games, that's what it seemed like. And that's the part I don't understand about this series. How has that changed? How all of a sudden has that become a terrible matchup for San Antonio when that was the matchup they wanted? I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes no sense. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's funny you talk about Brooks. I think this series has really shown how much progress he's made as a coach, because
agreed.
You know, even a year ago, you'd watch his team and kind of think, are they running any plays? What are they trying to do here? And there just wasn't a lot of creativity in their sets and stuff. And I think he tried to keep it simple because they were so young. But he's put in some clever stuff, and not just in this series against LA too. And defensively, he's done some stuff too that has really kind of thrown opponents off. And, he's you know, coaches improve is one of the things you know, the people forget.
And an underrated thing he did was, it's not like he gave the car keys to James Harden, but he let it be known that it was okay if James Harden grabbed the car keys every once in a while, you know, and that, get out of the way, Russell, you don't have to play point guard all the time. Let James run it. He's got a good matchup here. James is going to go to the rim. And I thought that Dallas game, I thought game four was the most important game that's happened to them again in the Dallas series, because it just wasn't their night. They were going to lose. And then the Harden thing took over, and it was kind of like the big light bulb went off, and flickered over that whole team. And then the second big game, game four, fourth quarter, San Antonio, when it just was clear Durant was their guy. And I don't want to overanalyze it, but man, it seemed like Westbrook finally realized it in that game. Or am I imagining that?
No, I'd agree. I mean, we've seen Durant do that before, but not to the extent where they had one thing working and they just went to it and just hammered them with it every time. And there was never an intermission where Russell said, well, I'm going to pull up from 20 now. And,
right.
And to that extent, I think you're right. The interesting stat about Harden, I don't know if you've seen this, in the last 3 minutes of games within 5 points, he did not have a field goal the entire season.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, even when I was writing the Game 2 retro diary and kind of extolling the virtue of the Spurs, I was saying, like, yeah, there are not any major flaws here. The only one I can see, and the one that I'm sure the Spurs fans are thinking about a little bit, is they are relying on Danny Green and Gary Neal and Kawhi Leonard and Steven Jackson. Like, they do need these guys to play well to win. Like, that is part of what's happening here, and those guys have been playing great. They've been lights out. Danny Green went south in this series. Like, he exited stage right in Game 3, and I think he only played 6 minutes in Game 5.
Yeah, and Bonner, too.
Bonner's been out. He just done nothing. Jackson, they really leaned on almost a little too heavily at this point in his career in Game 5. Leonard had an excellent game. I think he had an excellent Game 4. But, man, he's still a rookie. You can't trust rookies. You know, even like when Rondo was a second-year guy on the 08 Celtics, I never totally felt like we could trust him. Like, he's a young guy. You just don't know what you're going to get from that tonight. So having those guys kind of collectively – crumble a little bit on top of what's happened with Parker, maybe that's explainable, I think, right?
Yeah, and you know what, though? Even though you look through the series, and even with those guys struggling, San Antonio scored at a perfectly decent clip.
Yeah.
It's really, they just can't guard the Thunder right now.
Right. Well, you know, I look at Game 4, and it's like San Antonio came out that game. They're ready to play. Kerr even said it. He's like, this is going to be a great game. Both of these teams are locked in. This is going to be awesome. And, Ibaka and Perkins go 18 for 20. Like, House and I were talking about this on the podcast the other day. It's probably not going to happen again in our lifetime. You know, it was fluky. And sometimes you needed a fluky event to turn the series. Then Durant takes over at the end. Maybe that was the game that San Antonio is destined to win and they can't. I still am, you know, the games tonight, we're taping this on a Wednesday. I wouldn't be even remotely shocked if San Antonio won tonight. I'd be more surprised if Miami won than if San Antonio won. I wouldn't be surprised if either team won, but I think San Antonio, has a better chance of winning, even if Vegas doesn't agree. What do you think?
I was torn. I was thinking about this today. I was like, because I was thinking to myself, one of these series is going to turn again, and I wish I knew which one.
Right.
I agree with you. I wouldn't be surprised to see San Antonio win. I wouldn't be that surprised if Miami won either, though.
Well, yeah. Obviously, as a Celtics fan, I have to admit that I'm not surprised for all jinxing purposes. I also wouldn't be surprised if San Antonio won Game 6 and then Oklahoma City won Game 7. I'm not sure if home court matters in this series. I think it probably matters a little more to Oklahoma City, but I think either team could go into either building and win. I'm not sure that if the Celtics crowd shows up and the Celtics are playing, you know, at a really high level, I think it would be tough for this particular Miami team to win unless LeBron just went crazy, you know.
They were a shot from winning in Game 4, right?
Did you feel like we played well in that game, though? We played well for a half. Then that was a rollover in the second half by us. Like, I'm saying, if the Celtics played well, I feel like Oklahoma City could play well tonight, and San Antonio could just do the thing where they just are out of their mind. You know, and I still don't understand what happened to Parker in this series. Because that was a guy who everybody agreed was playing at a level of one of the top five players in the league.
Yeah, and when they changed up how they were defending him, San Antonio still hasn't figured that out. They've just made it so difficult for him, and it's really weird because you have to think he's seen switching defenses before. Like, I don't understand what the problem is, but and taking him out is taking all those like easy kickouts to the corner away too that they usually feast on with their role players.
Right. Out of these four remaining teams, forget about predictions for tonight. Who do you think has the best chance to win the NBA title?
I think you'd have to say Oklahoma City right now. They're one game away from advancing the home court in the finals against either opponent, and it just feels like it's their time.
Yeah, it really does feel a little 91 Bulls-ish. It does. Like, in the 91 Bulls thing, as it was happening, it was like, oh, yeah, this is happening, but they're still young. It's not quite their time yet, and then they just kept winning. you know, and they swept the Pistons. They lose game one to the Lakers on the Perkins three. And I was like, yeah, see, they weren't ready. Magic and the old guys are going to take it. And then they just went to that second gear and they won the next four games. And it just became clear at some point in that series, all right, the young guys, it's their time. And I'm with you. It did seem like in game four, in the fourth quarter, we might have hit that point. But I still want to see them clinch. I certainly wouldn't bet my life on them winning tonight.
The one thing that I wonder about with them, virtually every team en route to becoming a champion, even when it's a team like the 08 Celtics where they came in together and won right away, the guys had experienced this individually, some awful, crushing, heartbreaking failure first. Oklahoma hasn't really had that. I mean, they'd say last year against Dallas, but I don't think they were really ready for that one yet anyway.
The Oklahoma City fan.
The only thing I wonder about with them is if they need that moment first.
Their fans would say that blowing that Dallas game at home when their offense just fell apart and Durant was like 30 feet from the basket and couldn't even get the ball. I mean, that was pretty traumatic. You could argue that that was the game.
You could argue that, but I don't know if they walked away from that series going, we should have won that.
True. They were like, we weren't quite ready to win that, but we had a chance. And then Dirk went to another level and we couldn't match it. But now I feel like.
Whereas Dallas, you know, had the more typical history of a few examples where they really were thinking, wow, we should have won that. We blew that.
Yeah. 87 Pistons. I think even the Shaq, Kobe, Laker teams, like, you know, had a little adversity there, 97, 98, 99. You do need to get punched in the chin a couple of times. Hollinger,
yeah.
You're doing great work on ESPN.com. I'm trying to actually trade for you. Rob King and I have had a lot of trade discussions. So if you see your name in the papers, don't get alarmed. Just keep doing what you're doing. But,
can it be one of those NASCAR things where I do the Grantland series on Saturday and then the ESPN on Sunday or something?
Yeah, we don't want to share you. We just want you. We've stockpiled a lot of number one picks. We have some cap figure space. We're looking good. So you might be hearing from us a little more often, but keep doing what you're doing. I'll see you in the finals.
All right. Sounds great.
All right. Thanks.
Target the center.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.